You grooving already? We gonna make y'all dance on this one. Introducing my man.
Welcome. This is Wish Upon a Star. I'm your host, Andell Banks. Wish Upon a Star is a dynamic radio program spotlighting talent in the arts arena with discussions of challenges and some advice in making it in the visual, musical, literary, painting, creative, and performing arts. As a unique part of the show, we will interview professional guests, experts in the fields of entertainment law, copywriting, studio recording, publishing, and promoters relative to these highly competitive industries. Our topic of discussion today is the art and uniqueness of a jeweler. The first stages of jewelry came from the people in Africa. Perforated beads suggesting shell jewelry made from sea snail shells. Some shells have been found dating to 75,000 years ago in a cave in Kenya. There have also been ostrich egg shell beads found that dated to more than 40,000 years ago. Around 7,000 years ago, the metal of copper jewelry was seen. Ancient Egypt jewelers made elaborate pendants made from gold and embedded with gemstones such as turquoise, colored glass, along with semi-precious gems. Pre-dynastic Egypt, jewelry soon began to symbolize power and religious power in the community. Mostly usually worn by wealthy Egyptians, some artisans' pendants were as large as 8 inches wide. In the 20th century, we have seen the influence of this ancient jewelry artwork being incorporated into Western cultures. Our honored guest today, Mr. Melvin Johnson, has studied gemstones, precious metals, and sold the art of jewelry for many years. His biography. Melvin Johnson is a native Baltimorean, growing up in the Turner Station community. Turner's, as it is affectionately referred to, continues to thrive as a legacy of a great African-American community of Baltimore County. Melvin's primary education was forged in Baltimore County Public Schools. He there attended and graduated from City College. His former education was obtained from Morgan State University, receiving a degree in urban planning and administration. Melvin furthered his former education at Loyola College, receiving a certification in transportation services. He served his country in the Air Force for a term of 1967 to 1973 as an intelligence specialist. In this position, Melvin was entrusted with many of the country's classified documents. After his service in the Air Force, he returned to the United States and pursued an advanced education degree at Morgan State University. He taught in Harford County Public Schools for 30 years as an instructor and as an administrator. Thinking about what he loved to do full-time when he retired, he resumed his passion for jewelry, for its beauty, and all its uniqueness. Welcome to the show, Melvin.
Thank you, and it's my pleasure to be here this evening.
Melvin, talking about jewelry in the retail aspect, this is quite a specialized field, a field not immediately associated as a minority pursuing endeavor. What influenced you to become interested in this industry?
Well, I have sort of a unique story about how I got started in the jewelry business. It wasn't a passion or anything I grew up with. It was around 1995, 1996. It was a group of people, about 12, 14 people, that came to the United States from Johannesburg, South Africa, and they were sponsored by this church. And when they came, it was during the winter months, and they didn't have a whole lot of, they didn't have blankets and coats and those kinds of things. So I made a monetary contribution. I wrote a check for them to assist the church in buying some clothing and things for the people. One of the ladies that was among this group, she had two small children, and her husband did not follow her to Baltimore from Johannesburg. He stayed in Johannesburg, and then about a year later, he came to visit his wife and two kids. And on his visit, he was introduced to me. And then at that time, I found out that he was a courier. He was responsible for tracking or the transport of aquamarine stones from Madagascar to Johannesburg, and he sort of handled the paperwork and customs and all of that. But when he came to the United States, he had some rough stones, the rough gemstones, the stones that have not been processed or cut or ready to polish and ready to be set into jewelry, and he wanted to find a source here in the United States to sell them. So we went to the Philadelphia district up in Philly, the Diamond District up in Philly, and no one wanted to buy these stones. And we went up to New York, and no one wanted to buy the stones because most of the stones that come in the United States are already processed. You know, you get stone cutting and things like that in Africa and some other places, but there's some in New York and San Francisco, but it's quite expensive to do. Anyway, we eventually found someone to purchase the stones. And then he was talking to me about future, business. And, when he went back, he would get some stones and send them to me and see if I can sell them. But at the time, I didn't, I wasn't comfortable because I didn't know anything about gemstones. I only knew my birthstone, which was the aquamarine, because my birth month is March. So anyway, he told me to go to the library and look at the Lapidary Journal. So I went there and I looked at it, and that tells you all about stones and processing and those kinds of things. So it piqued my interest, and then I started going to the gem shows, the shows that come to Baltimore and Towson and D.C. Uh-huh. And I went there and I started looking at the stones, and I started reading up on the stones myself. And then I said, well, maybe I can make a business up. But I found out very quickly that there were very, very few minorities on that end of the business. So fortunately for me, I was introduced to a man named Fons Wickham. He's no longer with us. But Fons Wickham was a jeweler that was born and raised in either Barbados or Jamaica. Went to New York when he was 17, learned the silversmith trade from the East Germans in New York, and then he became a full-time jeweler, and then he moved back to Baltimore. And when I was introduced to him, then he began to, sort of take me under his wing and learn me about the business. And I was in an apprenticeship under him. He taught me how to repair jewelry and some other things. I went to I took a course down on Falls Road on soldering. And then I began to really look into the industry and taking courses in diamond grading, gemstone grading, pearls, and all the other gemstones. And shortly after that, I went in and I registered myself as a business. And once I got comfortable with the stones and metals, then I decided I was going to turn it into a business, and that's how the business started.
that sounds interesting. And then it did become a passion, I suspect.
Yes, after that, then it did, because it was secondary to what I was doing anyway. I was as in the school system, I was dealing with people all the time, so it was just an extension of the school system.
Yeah, and you have the personality for something like that too, which makes it helpful, very helpful. Okay, as you market your creative designs, what are some of the questions people frequently ask you as a jeweler?
Okay, when I introduce myself as a jeweler, most times, even with friends and strangers, it's funny that most women, when I introduce myself as a jeweler, one of the first things they ask me is how much could they get a pair of diamond studs for? That's the most popular question they ask. The diamond studs for the earrings. And they would ask me, well, how much would you charge me for a pair of diamond studs? Well, diamonds is one of those, diamonds is one of those gemstones that the variation and price depend upon the quality of the diamond. And there are so many steps involved in evaluating diamonds that it's hard for a person not in the industry to really understand, what makes a difference in the cost in diamonds. So usually I try to qualify that particular person by asking them what is it that they want to invest in terms of their budget. And if they say, well, I don't want to go over $500. Well, $500, I tell them, I say, well, $500 is, you can get a decent pair of diamond studs for $500, and they would be probably total weight of a half carat, quarter carat in each ear. And then I tell them to, just make some visits to the jewelry store so they can see what is the size of a quarter carat. And then I proceed with them from that. When it comes to the gentlemen, most gentlemen, when I introduce myself as a jeweler, they are fascinated by the watches. The first thing says, well, how much can you get me a Rolex for? And it's always the top of the line watch, a Rolex or a Movado or a Breitling. And these are watches. Again, these watches have a they're expensive, but the expense varies. You can get a Rolex for $4,000 or you can get one for $15,000. It just depends upon the intermakings of the watch itself. So again, I try to qualify them by asking them, just what do they want to invest in the watch. And sometimes people get insulted when you put it on those terms. But generally, the guys ask for watches and the ladies ask for diamond studs.
Oh, okay, that's very interesting. They only want the diamond studs, that's cute. Is there any advice you would give someone based on what you were just saying regarding purchasing a significant piece of jewelry?
Yes. When someone is going to make a purchase of jewelry, that's a personal purchase. And there's some guidelines you need to carry with you when you go to purchase the jewelry. And the first one, I say, if it's a gemstone, with a diamond, emerald, or whatever, have a salesperson identify the stone for you, okay? And when I say identify the stone, have them tell you what that stone is, have them to tell you, and then you can ask them, is it a natural or is it a synthetic? Because there's a difference.
Yeah.
You don't want to pay natural stone money and end up walking out with a synthetic. You have to ask and have them tell you. You want to find out what is the actual carat weight of the stone. In some ways you can calculate yourself what the value of the stone, if it's a sapphire and it's worth $500 a carat, and if you got a quarter carat, then you can figure that out. Identify the metal that the stone is placed in. When I say identify the metal, I mean determine if it's gold or gold-plated. Is it silver or is it silver plated? Gold plated and gold look the same when it's brand new. But after you start wearing it for a while, then the gold plate starts to peel off. You know, gold won't peel. But gold plated will peel. Okay. Examine when you're in the store, examine the jewelry for damage. You know, see whether the stone is properly set in the setting. Open the, if it have a latch on it, if it's a bracelet or a chain, open, you know, stick it into the lock, close it, see whether it's opening and closing properly. Try it on and make sure it fits. You know, just so don't just assume because it's the size that you wear that you automatically going to fit your finger, or be if it's a ring, or if it's going to be comfortable on your finger. If it's a watch, it may not be comfortable on your wrist. So just try it on. Ask about the return policy. A lot of times people make purchases, but they don't understand what the return policy is all about.
Mm-hmm.
Know if you can bring it back if there's something wrong. Find out if there's a warranty that goes along with it. You know, what does the warranty cover? And the last bit of advice, get a receipt. Because a lot of times people, you know, in the stores, they'll have specials on, and they'll sell it to you cash over the counter, but you have no tracer back to the purchase if anything goes wrong. So I just tell them, make sure you get a receipt. There's some other things that go along with it, but in general, that's the advice I give them.
Okay, but just another little point right on that. What about appraisal? Can you get an appraisal in the store, or should you go somewhere else and pay the rate? Let's say it's a significant piece of jewelry in the thousands.
Okay. An appraisal itself, you know, you can get one in the store, but it takes a while to do an appraisal because there's an official method of appraising a stone. You know, when you get something appraised, a piece of jewelry appraised, one of the things they're going to look for marks on the jewelry to identify your jewelry. They are also going to weigh the jewelry. They're going to have to determine what is the quality of the stone, how much if it's 14 karat gold or whatever. So a lot of things goes into that. And you can get it done at a store. You can go to another store and based on what they say that particular piece is worth, you can go to another store and get an appraisal. Wherever you go in the jewelry industry, that appraisal is going to be fairly close. Because when people examine that particular piece, there are certain things about the piece that they're looking at, and that's what they're going to determine the appraisal value to be.
Yeah, because sometimes you might need that for insurance, too, wouldn't you?
Right.
Okay. Your mantra, Melvin, is that you are a hands-on retailer to your customers of fine and unique jewelry. Okay, tell us a measure you take to assist your customers and make it an informed choice, some of which we've already said, when purchasing fine jewelry.
Okay, one of the things that differ from what's going on in the malls and in the jewelry store, you know, we both make sales, so that's a similarity, but I feel that I offer a more personal service. Okay, because when I work with a customer, I try to find out what it is that particular customer is looking for. I make suggestions to help them along because sometimes they're indecisive about what it is that they exactly want. Some people know what they want, and then when they do, then I give them some advice about that. I also give them options. You know, I send my customers to the jewelers. I tell them, go to the top jewelers around. You know, go and, you know, shop around, see what is the price range of this particular piece that you're looking for, you know, and in comparison to what I'm going to offer you as a price. I do door-to-door service. I have customers that I come to them right to their job, and especially in my repair business, I'll come right on their job or have someone come to their job, pick up their jewelry that they need repaired, and deliver it back to them, and they never have to leave their job. And also, I try to make myself, you know, available. I give them numbers where they can contact me, and I give them advice when they're making purchases. I have a couple of customers that are airline stewardess, and they may call me 3 o'clock in the morning from somewhere halfway around the world. They're in some jewelry store overseas somewhere, and they're about to make a purchase, and they call and seek my advice. And if it's a good purchase, I'll tell them go ahead, because I don't take a good buy from anyone just for the sake of, you know, me making a few dollars. If it's a good buy for them, I will encourage them to go ahead and do that, and you don't get that in the mall.
Oh, excellent, excellent. Yeah, and I think a lot of people, like you said, who don't know anything about jewelry and all of the properties, that's a good service. And I don't know if the stores even do that. Also, in your unique creations level, what are the names of some of the gemstones you use? I think the only thing we probably know is diamonds.
Yeah, there are a number of different gemstones that offer some nice quality at an inexpensive price. And it's just a matter of having knowledge of the gemstones. Some of my customers, sometimes they tell me they look at TV at night on the jewelry channels and they have all these gemstones and stuff for sale, the loose stones, but, you know, they're a little reluctant to buy them because they don't know what they are. I'm going to give you some examples of some stones that are beautiful gemstones, and they look like the more expensive precious stones. And I use these sometimes, but I let people know that I'm using them so that, you know, to get the price down to where they want their price to be. One of the stones is a stone called Iolite, and that's like a purple stone. But it's a blue stone, and it looks like, when you first look at it, it actually looks like a sapphire, like a blue sapphire. So people who are born, birthday is in September, who want a piece of jewelry, you know, with their birthstone, you can substitute an Iolite for a blue sapphire, because sapphire is their birthstone, but you can't tell the difference. And there are also these stones called, some people may have heard of them, spinel, S-P-I-N-E-L. They are out of Africa, and you can get red spinels. It's a bright red stone. It looks like a ruby, but it is more transparent than a ruby. Ruby is a more solid color, but it's a bright red, and it shows up beautifully in jewelry. You got black spinels. And this is a gemstone that is black like an onyx, but it's of a gemstone quality. And you have blue spinels as well. Tourmaline. Tourmalines are, you know, brightly colored, translucent stones. I use them sometimes. Of course, some of the main stones are sapphires, rubies, emeralds. One of the rare stones that I use when people want something different. The people that are born in June, their birthstone, they use pearls, but the stone for June is a stone called Alexandrite. And Alexandrite is a stone that it's mined in the Middle East and in Russia. And it's sort of expensive because Russia don't export too many of those pieces. Sometimes you can get some out of Turkey. And one thing, what's unique about the Alexandrite, it's like a translucent stone. To give you an example, you know, the sunglasses that people wear indoors, it's just a plain lens, and when you go outdoors, it turns into like sunshade. Well, with an Alexandrite, a high quality Alexandrite will change from a red to a green. And the ones you see in the store kind of mix between purple. Most of the stores you go to, the jewelry stores around here, very few of them will have a natural Alexandrite. Most of them will be man-made. But it's a very, very beautiful and rare stone. I work with pearls and, of course, diamonds and opals. There are different kinds of opals as well. So those are some of the stones that I work with.
Oh, and they are all beautiful. absolutely gorgeous stones. So we're at a, let's say we're at a show, and somebody comes up and says, if someone were to ask, what is a jeweler, how would that be defined?
Okay. A jeweler is basically an artisan, is a person who uses metal and gemstones and other materials to create a finished product, what we know as jewelry or an accessory, bracelets, earrings, rings, and other pieces. And they are also people that are engaged in the repair business. They repair jewelry. They appraise jewelry. So as a jeweler, you take on the title jeweler, but they do a number of different things in the industry. They make, they repair, they sell, they appraise. So those things goes along with a jeweler.
Oh, great. So that covers quite a bit. So let's say I am the person that at first I thought the jeweler, and having contemplated what you just said, the definition of a jeweler, what is a distinction if the question were asked, what is a gemologist?
Okay. A gemologist is a person, gemology is a science of dealing with natural and artificial gemstones. So a gemologist is a person who is academically trained to become qualified to identify the different kinds of gemstones in terms of grading the stones, you know, determine whether, especially with diamonds, whether it's a A, B, C, or D in color and BS1 or SI1 and clarity and those kinds of things. So the gemologist is the person who studies the gemstones and give them its rating or its grading before they come into the store to be sold. A jeweler can be a gemologist, but most gemologists are specialists. But they can carry the title of a jeweler, so in terms of, you know, grading stones and all those other things as a specialty, but they can do some of the other things that a jeweler does. So that's the difference between the two.
Oh, okay. So right now, Melvin, what I'm going to do is take a break. We're going to take a little break, and we'll be back in 1 minute.
Okay.
Alright, let's get loose.
This trick.
Yeah, that thing.
What up, y'all? Just came to your city to say what's up.
What up?
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Show me love.
Show me love.
Hey.
Hop off the plane to a new show.
What up?
And all the shorties, they be waiting on me. Thugs packing they pistols. But ain't nobody aiming on me. Got a pocket full of fresh dough. So you know I gotta bake it, homie.
Bake it for me.
And I'm thankful. Get whatever you want.
Hi, this is Andrew Banks, your host of Wish Upon a Star. Thank you so much for listening. You can also reach us at our archive on the website at Wish Upon a Star, and we're broadcasting at bbsradio.com, station 2. You can listen to the previous broadcast in the archive on the website. We also welcome comments and suggestions. Please send any comments and suggestions at email musicradio34@gmail.com. Again, any comments and suggestions, please email us at musicradio34@gmail.com. Today, we have Melvin Johnson, jeweler, of the art and uniqueness of a jeweler. We want you to, Melvin, tell us about this fascinating industry. But whenever you want to interject something I'm not asking, please do, because we have an hour, so you have the option to say exactly what you think our listeners might need to know. But
okay.
To continue with our general questions, gemstones are absolutely dazzling, as you said, and they all look extremely valuable. Okay, so based on the rating and everything of the gemstones, what specifically to tarnish the value of a particular gemstone.
Okay. When you look at a gemstone, you know, and the stones are, they come in so many different colors and variations and sizes and all that. To determine the value of one stone over another stone, there are several things that are taken into consideration. Okay, one is the color. Whether the stone has a single color like a ruby, which is red, have multiple colors like a piece of opal that has red, green, and other colors in it. And you use that color structure because it the color itself is what attracts a person to a particular piece of jewelry, especially when you talk about gemstones. The clarity of the stone, when you talk about the clarity in gemstones, you're talking about, is the color consistent all the way through the stone? If it's supposed to be a green emerald, is it green from the beginning of the stone all the way through the stone itself? If there's a slight variance in the texture and the color, that could decrease the value. The cut, how a particular stone is cut. If you take a stone like a gemstone and it's cut and an emerald cut, which means that all of the lines are linear, and they run leftwise. There's not as much a technique that goes into cutting a emerald cut stone as you would a round stone. If you look at a round stone, or if you have a diamond and look down in the top of the diamond, you will see all these different geometric shapes within the diamond. Those shapes have to be cut in. And it takes time to cut or measure and get those cuts, so that increases the value. And lastly is the rarity of the stone. You know, some stones are a lot more plentiful, so they're less expensive. Some stones are very, very rare to mine and difficult to mine. So to get them, you know, and have them processed and put on the market, they will carry a different value. And from those four things that I just described, there's some other things that go off, that spin off from that. One is beauty. And beauty is personal. You know, what's beautiful to one person, they may not be beautiful to the next. But if a lot of people are attracted by this particular stone, then that increases the value. Luster. How does it shine? How does it reflect light? Transparency and brilliancy of the stone, and lastly, the durability. You know, if it's a stone that can be easily chipped or cracked, or it's less valuable than a stone that, you know, that can withstand everyday use. And then they take all of those factors together, and then they price a stone based on that, and they price it by the carat weight.
Oh, excellent. So how's the jewelry market now? Let's say, according to a study, the largest jewelry market is in the United States, and it has a market share, I think, in the past 8 years, of 30.8%. Then comes Japan, India, China, and the Middle East, each with 8 to 9% capacity of the market, and Italy has 5%. The study predicts a dramatic change in market shares by this year, where the market share of the United States will have dropped to around 25%, and China and India will increase theirs to over 13%. However, the Middle East will remain more or less constant at 9%, whereas Europe and Japan's market share will be halved and become less than 4% for Japan and less than 3% for the biggest individual European countries, Italy and the UK. What do you think is happening to bring that about?
Well, one thing I will, you know, I will put in sort of like a disclaimer in terms of the market itself. You know, the United States may be decreasing it. It may appear to be decreasing, but the United States is always going to remain as the number one market in the world.
Right.
Because in the United States, the people in the United States wear different variations of jewelry. They're not locked into maybe 20 styles. You got some countries that, you know, they only wear certain types of jewelry. And because they only wear certain types of jewelry, they only buy certain types of jewelry, they only manufacture certain types of jewelry. But the United States itself is such a creative market in the United States that, you know, you have thousands and thousands of jewelers that are coming out with their own lines and their own creations, and so therefore they're always going to continue to offer something different in terms of what the market is asking for. And so as long as you have that buying power, you know, then it's always, the United States is always going to be the top market in the world. When the biggest gem show in the world, one of the biggest gem shows in the world, takes place here in the United States in Las Vegas, Nevada, every year. You have jewelers and companies that have emerald mines and ruby mines and every kind of gemstone you can think of. They come to Las Vegas to continue to grow their market. And then they have gem shows all over the world too, but they are not attended. The attendance is not as great as it is here in the United States. So you have people that, you know, that come here and continue year after year to increase their market. I make it a point to go to Las Vegas every year because you know, I place myself among those people who, you know, those companies that manufacture the gemstones and polish the gemstones. So, you know, I'm my own middleman. So if I want to purchase a stone, I can purchase it direct from the distribution process. So the advantage of having the show here in Las Vegas means that I can go out there and I can speak one-on-one to all of these different manufacturers and vendors, which in turn give me an opportunity to pass that savings on to my customers. And if, you know, when I deal with them my customers and I have some customers that could verify that, you know, the price that they're paid for their piece of jewelry that they got from me was a lot less than they could have purchased it elsewhere, because a lot of that overhead has been cut out and the savings is passed directly on to them.
Oh, excellent. And I understand not everybody can get into these shows. Without giving out too much, which you might call classified information, how does that happen?
Well, you can't. You'd have to be registered in the industry. You know, you'd have to be a part of industry. This show is different from the one that you see. You know, the one that comes down to the convention center. Walk in, you pay your $10, and then you walk around to these vendors and you make purchases. That's a public. Mm-hmm. That's a public show. This show is like any other industry expo. And the clothing industry is the same. They have conventions in Las Vegas, and unless you have a clothing store, you have a business that certifies that you are in that trade industry. You can't get in. You just, you know, they have security there, and you're just not gonna walk in off the street, because there are things that's being conducted there, seminars and things that are being conducted, and that's for the industry and not for the general public.
Exactly, and yeah, I've seen that happen where you really couldn't go in. Like I said, you know if you belong. Before we get into the other parts of the conversation, since we have the time. I know that now we have this modern jewelry now. Most modern commercial jewelry continues traditional forms and styles. But some designers, they say, such as George Jensen, have widened the concept of wearable art. the advent of new materials such as plastic, precious metal clay, and coloring techniques has led to increased variety in styles. Other advances have been development of improved pearl harvesting by people, the development of improved quality artificial gemstones, as you had mentioned, has placed jewelry within the economic grasp of a much larger segment of the population. What is your feeling about the generation modernization of hip-hop jewelry? Does that sort of lower the standard of unique and fine jewelry? The bling, no, I think you call it bling.
Yeah, no, I don't see where it has lowered the standards. I mean, it's just, I mean, the hip-hop industry is a transitional industry, just like, you know, we transitioned out of the 50s into the 60s, and then from the 60s into, you know, into the 70s and 80s, and the jewelry got more and more, and it goes in cycles, you know, like, so, you know, the hip-hop jewelry itself, you know, they look at, you know, it comes from the entertainment world, and the young people want to emulate the entertainers, so they dress like them, they look like them, you know, they try to wear the same type of jewelry or representation of, you know. But even the hip-hop people now, they don't wear the real diamonds and stuff when they're out there entertaining. You know, many of them have been in situations where the people have broken into their hotel rooms and they've been, you know, they've been mugged themselves, you know, out in public. So, you know, they wear the jewelry that looks like the real stuff, and that's an industry in itself. But even if you look at what's happened in the last 25 years in terms of jewelry, of what, especially what our females wear, 25 years ago, 25, 30 years ago, very few females wore fashion jewelry.
Mm-hmm.
They very few. You know, their jewelry, if it wasn't gold, if it wasn't real gold, they would challenge you, is this gold? If it's not gold, I don't wear nothing but gold. And that's what they, you know, used to say, was this silver or whatever. But you notice now, even the celebrity people, because most of the jewelry that a lot of the ladies used to wear, those styles and things were taken from the TV. News reporters and those ladies that had ladies that were on TV that had means that could buy and purchase this expensive jewelry and gold and all of those things. That's what they used to wear when they were on TV. But if you look at the jewelry that's worn by the TV personalities today, the weather report, the ladies that do the weather report in the morning, look at the jewelry that they wear. That's just basic fashion jewelry that everybody else wears. So that industry has changed a little bit, and what caused the change was the price that gold has gone up to a point that it had become out of reach for the average person. You know, you can, you know, a lady can spend $50 on some fashion jewelry and maybe walk away with maybe 15 different pieces, and $50 will just barely get her a pair of hoop earrings today.
Exactly.
In gold. So, you know, they change up with their outfits. It's easier to do. So the jewelry industry, it goes up and down and twist and turn, and but it's still the precious metals are still the primary source of the primary jewelry that a lot of the ladies do wear.
Okay, great. We're going to take another break. And when we come back, we're going to get into those precious metals. So we'll be back in 1 minute.
Welcome back. This is Andale Banks, your host of Wish Upon a Star, and we're broadcasting on bbsradio.com, Station 2. You can listen to all of our previous broadcasts in the archive link on the website. We also welcome comments and suggestions at musicradio34@gmail.com. Again, we're interested in your comments and suggestions, so please email us at musicradio34@gmail.com. Returning to our guest today, Melvin Johnson, who is a jeweler of unique and beautiful gemstones and precious metals creativity. Okay, Melvin, we have talked a lot about gemstones. We've described them. We've talked about their value. And usually it's the first choice of most customers when purchasing fine jewelry, because everybody can see it. It glows, it shines. But you also deal in precious metals. What are some of precious metals' interesting properties?
Okay, when you talk about precious metals and jewelry, you have, just like you have precious gemstones, diamonds, and whatever, and semi-precious gemstones will be garnets and things like that. You have precious metals and semi-precious metals, okay? And these metals are used as the basis for, you know, for setting the gemstones in, okay? And the three basic precious metals for jewelry is gold, silver, and platinum. The semi-precious metals are nickel, copper, and lately, stainless steel is on the rise, especially in the men's. And they're doing a lot with women, too. But stainless steel is used a lot in men's jewelry because one, it has a finish that's never tarnished. You know, you get a stainless steel bracelet that men wear. It differs from a sterling silver one because it's like, I guess the best way for me to describe it for people to understand the difference between the metal. It's just like back in the day when they had cars, and the cars had regular bumpers on them. Then you had the ones that had the flashy chrome, and there was a difference, okay? And so when you talk about stainless steel versus sterling has a nice shiny finish, but it oxidizes with the, you know, with the weather, where stainless steel is less expensive, but it keeps its permanent, it keeps its glow and its shine to it. So that's why a lot of the jewelry in men is being done in stainless steel, because of the weight, you know, how much metal it takes to make a man's bracelet or a man's ring or a necklace or whatever. And there's a difference in value in those precious metals. Gold is one of those metals that's rare, mm-hmm. and it have a wide range of value because it's used in currency. You know, they still produce gold coins in places in the United States and around the world. A lot of it is used in jewelry. So and because it's used in jewelry and it's mixed with precious stones, so it takes on that value. Silver, little less valuable than gold, but it's used too in manufacturing of coins, but not as much today because now they've been replaced with other similar metals. Tableware and dinnerware and those kinds of things that the silver is used, and platinum. And platinum is a little more expensive because of the rarity. You know, it's only one or two places in the whole world that they mine platinum. And platinum is the hardest of the metals. If you have platinum jewelry, you will find you go to get a ring enlarged or size down, you will find that when you take it in, they're going to charge you a little bit more. They're going to charge you a little bit more to work on that platinum because that metal is so hard. And also platinum is used in the fusion of atom bombs. So each one of those metals have its own unique use, but at the same time it labels the value to it. Now nickel and copper and stuff like that. Copper has value diminished a little bit because where one time they used to use a lot of copper tubing in the construction of house, but now that copper tubing has been replaced with PCP pipe and some other artificial piping materials, and they no longer use copper. But the copper, and also copper was part of, it's a conductor of electricity, so it was part of the electrical system, but now they're moving into fiber optics and some other stuff. So, you know, it diminishes its value a little bit, but it's still a valuable metal.
Right. We've gotten, somebody left us some money, or I don't know how we got the money, but we got a whole lot of beautiful jewelry hands. So there are some major mistakes I think people make in not protecting their value pieces of jewelry. Give us some pointers on how a person can ensure the safety of their personal jewelry.
Okay. What you wanted you talked about protecting and the safety of your jewelry. First, let's talk about protection of your jewelry.
Okay.
One of the things that let's go with the ones with the jewelry that's made with precious stones and other metals. One of the first things you need to know is to make sure that you're not going to use materials that will damage your jewelry. Bleach is one of those products that will destroy a precious stone quicker than anything else. You know, if you have rubies, emeralds, sapphires, and that kind of thing, do not make sure when you're cleaning, you do not expose them to bleach and water. Do not get into swimming pools that have that chlorine and stuff in them. Because of the way the gems are processed and the finish that's on it, sometimes that bleach will just eat away at the finish. And some people, they end up, the rings don't look as pleasant or as beautiful as they did before they used those chemicals. Read carefully the instructions on jewelry cleaner, because there is no jewelry. The jewelry cleaner is not a one cleaner clean all. You have to make sure that you look at the back when you go to the store and the places that sell jewelry cleaner, and they're different designs. And it don't mean that cleaner is for all jewelry. You look on the back because it may say do not clean pearls or opals or other jewelry with this particular cleaner because of the alcohol content that's in the cleaner. And if you're not aware of that, destroy the jewelry. Jewelry that you have.
Mm-hmm.
You were going to say something?
No.
Okay. Jewelry that you have in your possession and in your home, and people don't look at the cumulative value of the jewelry that they have. You need to make sure that, and some of my customers say, well, I have insurance on my jewelry and it's in my house. And that may be true, but you have to check that rider. They call it a rider that they attach to your insurance company, attached by your insurance company. You have to know the replace value. You have to read that rider, because some people, some riders say, well, we're going to replace it at 50% of the value. And you don't know that until the jewelry has to be replaced. Then you're in the insurance company's office arguing, well, I paid this for this, and you're only going to give me half. But you have to know that up front. Okay? You need to have that jewelry appraised. Make sure that you understand the value of that jewelry. And also, you need to make sure that you keep up with your receipts when you can. Now, that's one of the you asked about the services that I provide. That's one of the things that I do. I do consultations on, making sure that your jewelry is appraised correctly and you had a proper rider on your insurance. And before we leave the program, I'll let people know, you know, how they can get in touch with me about if they want to utilize that service.
Okay, we're going to get close to that, but I want to interject this one other thing that I think might be of interest. We're approaching the vacation months right now, Melvin. Some of us may be fortunate enough to go on trips, which includes maybe cruises, out-of-state travel, and even foreign travel. Is there any advantage of buying gemstones or any jewelry purchases in foreign countries?
Okay, there are advantages and there are disadvantages. And you have to see which outweigh which. The advantages that you have, you know, and a lot of people travel, so this is nothing new to them. You don't pay taxes on the jewelry when you buy it overseas and places like that. You get a bigger selection because when you go in these jewelry stores, you know, you just amazed by how all these different selections that you can make and that you can buy loose gemstones. You know, they have the stones right in the little thing in the showcase, and you can purchase them and you can bring them back and have them set. I do a lot of that. I set stones when people buy when they're on vacation. The uniqueness, you know, you see pieces that you don't normally see here in the United States. So that's the advantage. The disadvantage is, if I can go this quickly, you may not be able to return it, okay?
There may not be
a warranty that goes along with it, because you're going in a store purchase, and you're running back to the ship. You don't stop to get a warranty. It could be undervalued. You know, you think you're getting a bargain there, but you could come back here to the States and get that same piece at a less price, even with paying taxes. And sometimes it's even cheaper if you buy it here. So you got advantages, the uniqueness of it, and the fact that you don't pay taxes. But that don't always mean that you're getting the best deal.
What about if you had some raw pieces? I know I bought some. It was the actual raw amethyst, the actual it wasn't diamond, turquoise, topaz. They were the actual raw stone. Is that true or? I was going to just put it in a frame.
The gemstones are polished and mined. You know, everything is not already set. You can buy loose pieces and come back and have a designer put them gold border around them, a silver border around them, and wear them as a necklace or a bracelet or whatever. You know. But sometimes, you know, that's the uniqueness of it. You know, you get that fix. You're not going to find loose gemstones in the United States. The stores just don't sell them like that. You know, but when you're out, you can get them.
I'm going to have to find that because you have given me an idea. They may not even have to cut it. They can wrap it with a silver, you know, like silver cord or something. And I can use it as a... I'm glad you mentioned that. Okay, Melvin, we are at the wonderful part of the show, and that is that this has been an enormously informative conversation. I know our audience learned a great deal about one of the greatest pastimes, purchasing unique and collectible fine jewelry. So, how can someone contact you if they have questions, need advice, or just want to purchase some of your unique pieces? And you can repeat everything that you say so that when they go back and listen to the archives, they'll have, okay, far away.
Okay. If they have immediate questions, they can feel free to call me at 443-916-5677. They can call me anytime that they want. If they have a burning question, they're about to make a purchase and they need some information, they're just to call me. I have my email address is Harbor Landing Jewelry, HARBORLANDING, harborlandingjewelry@gmail.com. Now, in the beginning of May, I'll have my website back up. And those people who are listening to me now, and they're interested in seeing what's going to be on the website, and or they have questions that they want to direct to me, they can use the email to do that. Email me if you want to be on my mailing list. I have a created mailing list that's going to let you know when specials are going to come out on the website. So if you email me and say, I listen to the program, and I want you to place my email address on the email list, and I certainly will do that. I do take appointments. I do things by appointment. If you got a major purchase and you need some time to sit down to discuss, or if you need appraisals done and those kinds of things. I have an office in Orange Mill, but I only see people by appointment only because of the time. I do repairs, and as mentioned earlier, I will come to your job or have someone come to your job if the company allows to pick up your jewelry, repair it, and get it back to you. You never have to leave the workplace. So those are some of the services that I offer. Again, if anyone wants or needs any of my services, just give me a call. If it's immediate need or if it's a burning question that you may have, just send me an email.
Okay, absolutely perfect. I'm going to put this on all my sites and even going to put it on my Facebook page. Again, Melvin, from the deepest of our hearts, we really appreciate it, and the information has been fantastic. We're going to sign off when I come back. So right now, thank you so much for listening. We'll be back to sign off in 30 seconds. Thank you, Melvin, and goodbye.
Thank you for having me.
This is Ann Dell Banks, your host of Wish Upon a Star. We're saying thanks for listening. And again, we're broadcasting on bbsradio.com station 2. Listen to all of our previous broadcasts in the archive on the website. Again, we welcome comments and suggestions at our email address, musicradio34@gmail.com. You can friend us on iTunes and Facebook. This is Andale, your host, and Denise Banks, your coordinator, saying, keep reaching for the stars.
Monday morning, getting back on my grind. What a weekend, funny how time can